This is the musical Fursona, the one and only greatest recapping of a show that deserves to be kneecapped. I'm Moises Chouyan. Joining me, as they will for the rest of this gauntlet of masked Singapalooza, Kathy Campbell, the roving unicorn reporter. How are you, Kathy?
Oh, what did I sign up for? Regretting everything. But you know what? This is fine. This is fine. We're doing this for the lols, and that's the important part.
Kelly Gamont, do you do this for the lols, or do you do this for the children? Who do you do this for?
I do this for the people's ovation and glory forever, of course.
Episode 3 of The Masked Singer. We've eliminated two performers, and I almost want to start with the elimination, but I guess we should follow some semblance of rules.
Well, let me start the timer first. So the timer is going.
We've begun.
I want to start even further back than the Lion's performance, because I think we have to spend at least a second on Nick Cannon's turban.
Yes. So in the first two episodes, he had like masks on a hand, like on a stick. And this one, he came out with the full headgear type mask, which I believe was probably 3D printed, and looks like those trendy polygon images, which is fine. But yeah, he's got to keep the turban. I thought it was a very interesting fashion choice.
Especially because he left it on the whole rest of the show.
Yeah, yeah. It was the only surprise of the whole thing, and only because literally no one mentioned it at all.
Not at all. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I also did not expect guest judges. So seeing Joel McHale up there was kind of nice. And it was sort of fun to get what seemed like sometimes the audience reaction to some of these.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun having Joel McHale visibly and openly disdainful of the entire thing that he was there for.
Yes.
And coming from the former host of The Soup, I think that's hilarious. But his open disdain for the show that he was being paid to be on and do no work on was hilarious to me.
Oh my goodness. And him and Ken had this
great repertoire.
I love it. I am so here for that. And they were actually funny.
Yes.
It almost feels like Ken was like, guys, you got to throw me a bone here. Just put me on this panel with somebody I actually like.
Yes. No, I agree.
I could see that. Yeah. It was fun to, like, they had sight gags. Like, there was a point, I didn't realize there were binoculars up there. And then at one point, like, Joel McHale hands his binoculars to Ken and then picks up the binoculars in front of Ken and just starts using those.
Right.
And, like, the moments between the two of them, like, I want to watch that show now. Like,
yeah.
as much fun as this is, I would just like to watch a show where the two of them, I don't even know what, but I would watch it.
It's called Community. It's available on Hulu. And
I love Community, but they didn't do enough stuff together.
Yeah, that's true. And anything else about just the setup of this episode of the show? The first thing that came to mind for me was, how are they going to kill a bunch of time?
And I was like, is this still going to be an hour?
Yeah.
Then the answer is yes.
They did the thing that has become common on British singing shows produced by Fremantle Media, where they create a new clip package that is not as heavily produced, recycles the video from the expensive clip package that they shot on location somewhere or on a green screen, and then adds in some just wheel-spinning BS from the contestant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine, and I found that I got absolutely no help from any of the new clues that were dropped, and they fell very much in the genre we discussed on the last episode of clues that seem to be for the inside of the mind of the contestant themselves and not the actual audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though. The clue on the newspaper for Lion pretty much confirmed that it was Rumor Willis for me, because she was born in Haley, Idaho.
She was born in Haley, Idaho, which Joel McHale said.
Yes.
Haley, Idaho. And I'm like, wait, why do you know? Oh, right. You're from Mercer Island. Of course you would know a tiny town in Idaho.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was my first thought, too, when I saw that was, wait, Haley, Idaho? Because I know a couple of people who were from Haley, Idaho. So.
Yeah. I also loved the kind of argument that Jenny McCarthy and Nicole had about, like, Jenny's like, I think it's obvious that she's a professionally trained singer. And Nicole's like, I don't think so. And it was just like, ooh, like beef there.
Two people who don't know each other and are trying to edge each other out as the sassy hot lady on the panel.
Basically.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then, like, I didn't.
How do we feel about extra thick, as I refer to Robin Thicke now? Hi, I'm extra thick. Hey, everybody.
He's just as weird as last time. So, yeah, we'll get to his moment later because he had one.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you're talking about. But, yeah. For the first couple of performances, it was kind of like meh. I was like,
Rumor Willis is doing exactly as well as I would think Rumor Willis would. Like, this is like somebody that you've seen blow people away at karaoke multiple times, where other people in the room are radically more surprised than you are, and you're like, yeah, they can do this. This was somebody's B material who usually walks in and like blows people away like she did with the first song. Donny Osmond, who is obviously the peacock in every single way.
Yes.
There's literally nothing that could shake me from that. I would say he didn't surmount his first performance, but there wasn't the notable step down of, oh, the person who was visually dynamic and dancing and prancing around is standing in the middle of a chandelier ring and mostly standing and stopping and standing and stopping and doing a little bit of hand
movement.
Yeah,
I was disappointed. I was disappointed in the song choice. I was disappointed in the performance. I was disappointed. Like, yeah, she sang fine, but it wasn't mind-blowing, the song. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like eh.
So that brings us to good old Dur. Good old Dur. Dur got up there and he sang him a song. He sang about the most stereotypical modern pop country Florida Georgia Line kind of thing that you would expect from Terry Bradshaw. And I loved that Robin Thicke was so proud of himself later on, going, when I saw him laugh, I knew that's how Terry Bradshaw laughs.
Right.
I watched the football.
Because I've seen TV.
Yeah, I've seen TV. It is for you humans who do not have television, it is an amazing invention.
Yeah.
So I think we can imply the spoiler horn at the beginning of the episode, right? Like, we know this is a thing.
Yeah. It's a recap show. You don't listen to this.
Saying recap implies there was a spoiler horn played when he said that.
Yeah.
So he left, and the thing that was funny to me about that was two things. First of all, like, somebody of course had to ask him which was harder, the Super Bowl or this, and he was like, oh, this. And then Joel McHale asked him if he would please wear that outfit next NFL Sunday.
Right.
And I kind of want to know if he's going to.
My favorite comment, though, came from Ken Jeong before they got to the end, when Nicole said that she thought it was Terry Bradshaw, and he said in the clip package, the way that he was throwing wildly all over the place off target, that has to be Terry Bradshaw.
Yes,
that was such a good dig. I mean,
that was so good.
Bravo, Dr. Ken.
Yes, Dr. Ken line of the night. That was it.
Yeah, coming up strong with hilarity. It was great. And I hadn't realized how much stuff Terry Bradshaw had done, like, especially when he did the little hint thing, which apparently is a thing. They're not even pretending to ask a question to have a hint come out. Like, they're just, it's Nick Cannon saying, hey, do you have any clues for us?
Let me ask you, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
He's like, I have multiple world titles, started in track and field, then it went to horses. And I'm like, I didn't realize he did all of that stuff. And it makes sense when you're a rich white dude in the South and you have a lot of money. Like,
you breed champion quarter horses, which is totally, it is totally a thing. And in Terry Bradshaw's mind, that's something that people know him for. And absolutely nobody knows him for that unless you're horse people. And as a recently divorced horse person, and horse people are not centaurs, contrary to common belief, this is something that was kind of barely on my radar, but it was so much less decisive in telling me that's who this guy is than literally everything else. And the fact that he is so horrible at disguising himself, even when behind a voice box and a giant suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So this brings us to a horse of a different color, unless anybody has anything else on Terry.
I was just going to say real quick, the little, so every time that they've gone off now, they have a little bit of an interview talking about their performance or whatever. And he was talking about how scared he was that he would panic when the lights came on. And then he did. I felt like this time they modulated the voices even less than they had before. So you could hear the real voice coming through a little bit more. Yeah. And that just kept getting the same as the time went on. So that was interesting. But yes, let's go to the horse of a different color. That's a peacock.
Of a different color and a different shape. Well, actually, was peacock before? I don't even care what order they were in.
Yeah. Peacock was next.
Okay. Thoughts on peacock. What do we think of Donny Osmond going up into the stratosphere, flying higher than a peacock's ever flown before?
I thought it was an interesting choice for a performance to put, like, hey, let's stick him on a stage that's really high and then make him come down, and the poor morph suit fake dancers are going to, like, come up and spend 10 minutes unhooking him.
Unbuckling him.
There was a visible edit where his gigantic cape and the harness got moved, and I almost feel like in the recording of it, because I've seen so many... I saw Jeff Bridges do his Austin City Limits taping, and he started and stopped no fewer than 38 times. And TV people, like, they know when they can cut, and this tableau was set up obviously so that they literally could cut the song, unhook him if they had to, or vamp with background music, and then just cut it together so that it looked seamless, but suddenly his gigantic cape just disappeared.
All of a sudden the helpers were just vanished.
Yeah. You could see them, like, sort of on the edges of the frame, and then all of a sudden it was gone. I thought it was interesting that he, it's not a right now song, but it's definitely a more current song than I think I've probably ever heard Donny Osmond sing.
Yeah, it's more current than, like, Donny singing an Elvis song.
With the exception of him singing in Mulan, which I guess now that I think about it, is not as current as I expected.
It's not as current for any of us, and we're all old bags of dust.
Yeah. but that's fine. But yeah, no, I thought it was good. It wasn't a step down of a performance. He still went hardcore.
Yes.
And he definitely was feeling more comfortable in the mask and the suit. And his movements were all very much the entire performance.
I can honestly see him going directly out of this into a Vegas residency that has peacock crap all over it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's coming out in that outfit at least once. Yeah.
It feels like that is exactly what he wants out of this. Is a Vegas residency down the street from Britney Spears.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, another, because him and Marie had one for a while, which is what he was talking about when they did ask, like, yes, he has played in Vegas. And that's exactly why. I thought he was great. I also enjoyed his performance because he went for it. And that's another song that, like, you have to be able to hit. And that's not, those aren't notes. In certain cases, I mean, we'll get to the next one later, but
I look forward
those
to
aren't
them.
Notes that most people can hit.
I look forward to them doing, like, theme weeks where they all do something along a goofy theme. That's another singing competition thing that I would hope that they would jump into. We're running short of time. We'll jump over to the horse of a different shape, the unicorn.
Yes.
What did we think of Unicorn, who we kind of assume is Tori Spelling? The clues did absolutely nothing to confirm or deny it. It just confused me.
Oh, no, she's feeling victorious.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that completely because I honestly get kind of bored when she shows up.
Yeah. And I was bored
yet
with
another reason we think that's
too.
Who it is.
Like, it was meh. And how do you go meh on a Britney Spears song? Right?
Like, ask Tori Spelling, the expert at it.
It was the
gymnast in the bedroom thing. I was like,
and that is our extra thick, like, moment of the week.
Is it because she has, like, six kids or something? And I loved that since Robin Thicke has absolutely no idea that this is Tori Spelling, he thinks this is somebody that he could sleep with.
Right.
That's absolutely the way that it registers. You see that look,
like,
in his eyes of, oh, man, I could
and
smash,
like,
with her.
Felt so gross.
Yes.
I needed to take a shower after that.
I've been taking a shower continuously since watching this.
Oh, that one.
And then in the after part where she's like, Robin thought I was a model. I can be anyone I want to be behind the mask. It was so.
It when sleazy rapists like me.
But that's okay. Let's move on to the monster.
The center of my heart. I love the monster. Nothing has pushed me off of thinking this is T-Pain. What do we think of the performance? What do we think of our pretty much consensus guess? Where do we fall on monster?
That high note. Holy mackerel!
Yeah,
yes.
Lordy Lord.
I have the closed captions on when I watch shows for podcasts, and the closed caption for that section was sustains high pitched note. I thought that was delightful.
Yeah, it did say in the package. I drive up from the south, something like that.
Tallahassee is pretty far
he's
south.
He's from Florida. Yeah. I did like the little machine buckled to his hand that made it rain. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was really funny.
He said he was going to celebrate getting his mind right, which I thought was kind of interesting. I want this to be T-Pain because I think it's a comeback that would be really great. And I thought it was really interesting that not one of them, and I know I'm giving some credit to some people here, but not one of them, like, was able to register, obviously professionally trained in some way or a professional in some way, with, like, what if this is a person who performs that we just don't see sing, you know?
Yeah.
I should not necessarily, you know, stereotypes and all of that, but when I look at that, like, I don't see a lot of people thinking of hip hop because none of them seem like people who might listen to much of it, except maybe Ken.
Well, and I wonder how much of that is based on the actual costume of the monster. It doesn't seem like it's one that you can move a whole lot in. Yeah. Whereas, like, Peacock, the way that
there's a lot of motion possible there.
Yeah,
Peacock costume. I mean, it's a stage suit for a Vegas guy, and the monster thing is like something that somebody shows up in disguise to San Diego Comic-Con, so they're not mobbed by fans.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's very
Adam
true.
Savage at Comic-Con costume.
Yeah.
I thought that the song choice was also interesting because when you go into it thinking that it's already somebody, like, you look at that and you're like, you know, how does T-Pain even know he lives in a world where Gavin DeGraw exists?
Right.
So, like, start there and then go with, like, as a song, it was an interesting choice. And then he went for that high note in the middle, which is him making that song his own. That what I remember of hearing the original version of that does not have that note in the middle, at least not for that long.
No. Mm-mm.
So he's taken this off in some other direction. And I, whoever that is, I want to hear them sing more.
Yes.
Yeah. He's outstanding. I hope that he stays in the competition for the long haul because he's the artist that I'm the most interested in this resulting in a full album of stuff that we don't expect from that person.
Yeah.
And a lot of the rest of it feels very specifically calculated for this result and that result. And I really genuinely enjoyed the performances so far. I've rewatched his Don't Stop Me Now 3 or 4 times because it's just really good. It's just really good. And it makes me sad that I know that next week we're not going to get to see him perform because it'll be the other 5.
Yeah. Right. I thought I also really enjoyed the performance, and it came from it in a way. So normally when I watch these types of performances, I prefer the dancing. I prefer like that visual movement. And even though Monster didn't have any of those fancy dance moves or anything that Peacock had, I still preferred Monster's performance this week.
Mm-hmm. I did too. As a performance. Yeah, for sure.
So, of this group, who do you think is going home next after Deer? Who's next on the chopping block?
I think it's going to be Unicorn. Unless Lion gets worse again, mm-hmm. next week.
Unicorn or lion, depending on song choice, would be my pick.
I feel like the big spoiler of the show is the fact that they've built so much of the branding around lion that lion is going to be there until the very end. It's going to be final two, lion and somebody else.
Unless they have it be that way so that they can then build the next promotion for the next event around someone else.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally fair.
Because then you get an ad campaign of like, you know, we know who the lion is. Who's next?
Right? Yeah.
So I could see that. That would be a thing that I think is entirely possible.
Yeah. My money is on Unicorn going home.
Yeah. I'm also 100% okay with that.
Yeah, I could see that too. I would like Lion to hold out a little longer, but I kind of don't care if I see any more Unicorn, and I'm kind of interested to see Lion. And there's the timer.
Yay!
So going into next week, we're jumping back to the other side of the talent pool. We will see between Twitchy Rabbit, Alien, Raven, Poodle, and B, which one of them ends up going home. Do we have a prediction for next episode? Which one of those five is going home?
I think it's going to be either Raven or Poodle. I don't know which one I would prefer. But I think both of them are up. But again, it depends on song choice. It depends on how they come up, because I definitely wouldn't have thought that. Well, and when the counts came in, there was a 2% difference between mm-hmm. Deer and somebody else. I wonder if it was Deer and Unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
Because Unicorn wasn't that great. So it's entirely possible that this next week, our entire minds will change depending on the performance. Stay tuned.
I think Rabbit or Alien.
Interesting.
I'm feeling pretty good about it ending up being Raven, because I think the others have some more crowd pleasing kind of stuff going for them, and who knows how they tabulate this stuff. But
true.
You know, I feel like there's more visual dynamism to the way that they've set up the costumes for the rest of them, where Ricky mm-hmm. Lake is subjected to that giant wing harness that cannot be fun.
No, and it's not.
Yeah.
Sound like fun.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of The Musical Fursona. I'm Moises. Kelly, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and on my blog as Verso, and you can find me hosting the Daily Observations podcast over at the Mac Observer 5 mornings a week.
Kathy Campbell, where can people find the Soup Lady on the internet?
You can find me at Mrs. Soup on most of my social media. KathyCampbell.com has links out to all of my different business dealings and podcasts, so head over there.
All of you lovely humans out there in internet land can find me at Moises Chiu, MoisesChiu, on Twitter, on Instagram. Don't bother adding me on Facebook. Facebook's terrible. I've got some podcasts that are, in theory, coming back off of hiatus if my domain name issues are resolved. One thing that is resolved, when we recorded the first episode, our Twitter account was put under review by Twitter because we was too young, everybody. But the wonderful news is that you can find us at Musical Fursona on Twitter for the next 8 weeks, I guess. We are hosted by the wonderful Incomparable Network within the TV podcast. If you want to support the Incomparable, become a member of the Incomparable. Tell them that we sent you specifically. Paid members of the Incomparable in the month of March are going to have a whole bunch of member incentive content dropped on them, including, and I realized we should probably figure out the actual technical way that we're going to handle it. We are going to figure out a way to live broadcast running commentary over the finale. So we will be spinning our wheels a lot because the show's format will be spinning its wheels a lot. It already has. And Lord knows they're going to have a lot of empty air to fill for a full hour slot.
Yep.
But we are up for that challenge.
Are we?
I hope so.
Of course we are.
Yes.
We'll figure it out.
Yes.
Until next week.